All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, I repeat, perhaps ad nauseum, children of all ages, those who have not lost their sense of wonder, exploration, and discovery. Back from episode 674, Mr. Ole Demigod. He is he's hiding out in high luxury somewhere in the south of Spain. And, you know, he is the recipient of the Prague Peace Prize, a nominee for the Swedish Lighthouse Award. He is a he's a prolific author. Coup d'etat in slow motion, 1 and 2, Shadow of Tears, Remind Me, as in R-E hyphen mind me, Yolanda Yoga Panda, and I understand he's working on 3 more. He may or may not want to give us a hint as to what he's working on, but in any case, we'll see, as Zen Master says. Welcome back, Ole. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you, John, but not hiding and in the south of Spain yet.
Okay. I don't know. I would think about hiding in the south of France, maybe, but then again, maybe not.
Oh, but I tell you, it's funny in one way, but in another way, the reason I live in Spain, one of the main reasons I left Sweden was because I had 2 friends murdered due to our investigations into the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister. So it's I did a good choice. I've been here since the year 2000, and it's been a beautiful place to live in, but with some sad undertones.
2 friends murdered. And yep. And we're thinking that the reason is the investigation of the assassination of the Prime Minister, yeah?
100%.
What else could it be?
I had a visit as well in my home, but it scared me, I tell you. It's when you see the brutality of these forces we're up against and how they deal with problems by eliminating individuals, it gets very frightening. But there you go.
And I take it that once that happened, was that the end of the investigation?
Absolutely not. It was just that I relocated, and then I published my books. I mean, the thing is, if you back down for threats or something like that, you can't make a difference. What I try to do is, the few times it's happened, I haven't had that many death threats, but when I've had them, what I do is I just take one step back, wait, you know, do something else, focus on something else, so that whoever did it to me think that, okay, he backed down, and then I take 2 steps forward, you know. So push, then when there's tension, take a step back, wait, and then push forward again, and wait. Maybe I shouldn't say this, but this is the way I've done it so far. And so also what I do when I receive threats, which once again is not very rare, usual, I just go out on international radio right away. I describe the threat. I describe where it came from. I, you know, go through my health. I'm perfectly healthy. My car had just been checked. The brakes are okay. I'm not suicidal, and so on. So should anything happen, and then the thing is right back at where this threat came and from, and so far so good.
Well, you want to hear a good one?
Please.
You remember Seth Rich?
Yeah.
Well, here it is, foxnews.com. The family of the Democratic National Committee staffer who was gunned down on July 10 in Washington, D.C., blasted reports that he was a source of thousands of emails leaked to WikiLeaks. Rod Wheeler, a retired Washington homicide detective and Fox News contributor hired by a third party to investigate the case, made the WikiLeaks claim, which was corroborated by a federal investigator who spoke to Fox News, and here's the quote: "My investigation up to this point shows there was some degree of email exchange between Seth Rich and WikiLeaks." It did seem odd that the man was dead, but he still had his cell phone, keys, money, and wallet. So there you go. That's how they deal with people. It's amazing, the information.
No, but at the same time, I have to say, people think that they kill people very easily. They do not. I mean, they hesitated for a long time because it's very messy with assassinations. I have this from whistleblowers that used to work as assassins and so on. So what they try to do, first of all, when somebody really take a step forward with unique information that can become a threat. It's not enough to surf to some websites and so on and think that, oh, I know some stuff. That is not a threat to them. It's when one individual suddenly make a massive move forward or intend to go out in the media or something with some unique information. First, they try to discredit that person or threaten him. If that doesn't work, then physical intimidation, maybe threaten their family, you know, kill their dog or pet or something. And then the final thing is elimination. That is normally the way it goes.
Are these things normally, in your experience and according to your whistleblower contacts, I take it has to be a very serious threat that might, what, bring down a government or stop a war or start one? Or how important does it have to be?
I think it can be a lot less important than that. But since these operations, like the ones we're talking about tonight and so on, are so important for their timeline, that these false flag operations get carried out in the right order and get pulled off successfully and stuff. So anyone from inside these type of operations or assassinations, if people in the hit team or so starts getting second thoughts, or somebody who has some kind of unique information about, or very sensitive information about these different individuals in the so-called elite, if they decide to step forward, then that is when it happens. So it can be a lot less, but just like Seth Rich, you know, a sensitive area in one little, and they, if they can't stop him, then sometimes this is what happened. And sometimes out of desperation on their part, which also comes out in the form of messy killings or, and so on, that gives away a lot of clues for people like myself that really dig into them, trying to understand what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you predicted, you have successfully predicted four false flag operations and made them public. Now, I mean, I'm not trying to just squeeze all of the angst and paranoia out of this that I possibly can. But when you make public announcements as to upcoming false flag attacks, I take it somebody might hurt one of your pets.
I think we're beyond that point with me. I think I'm a major boil in the butt for them. That is my intention. My intention is to stop this madness and to really expose what is actually going on, that what we're seeing are not the work of thousands of crazy Muslim terrorists, but it's a organized attack on Western civilization according to the New World Order's agenda, where they use, in this is a theory, but I'm trying to prove it, and I'm really getting close to it, where they're even using the same unit being flown from country to country in army planes to NATO bases and American Air Force bases, a small little tight unit of crisis actors, directors, military advisors, experts on explosives, smoke bombs, makeup, also with all the amputee crisis actor things that is needed, clothing, lighting, catering, guards also, because they guard this little unit. They call them bouncers. You can often see them in the outskirts of these operations. Many of them look like former military guys, a little overweight jogging outfit, just walking around, actually not doing anything as it looks like, but they are. They're making absolutely sure that no normal person get close to the action, and that no one from the inside can escape either. So that's their job.
Go on.
Sorry. Then it's always NATO countries or the U.S. or countries that have different security agreements with NATO, like Canada, Australia. Otherwise, it's the same. And it's almost like now you're seeing like a it's just going around and round and round and round in the same circles, same countries, same police districts in the big cities. It's the same theme. Everything is the same. But it gives you the impression that we live in a world that is absolutely filled with mayhem, terror, bombs, Allah Akbar, all of these things, where what we actually are seeing is like a rock band on tour, where if it had been Pink Floyd, for instance, you would see the same show being played out in Stuttgart, as in Paris, as in New York, as in Sydney. The same here. It is the same theme again and again. And I tell you, John, if I show you like 30 different photos from 30 different of these attacks and ask you to identify which one comes from where, I mean, hardly anyone would be able to do it, myself included, because it is the same. The script is the same. Often they use the same. Even they, people die, and I have somebody who's died three times, you know, the same individual, the same people pop up as three or less of these attacks. I mean, what are the chances of the same person being on location in three or more of these terror attacks, you know, as a victim, as a bystander, as an eyewitness? You've got the same police officer, detective appearing in different states, you know, same name, but different states and different locations. And so on. So it's this is why also I've been able to predict these things, because just like had this been Pink Floyd's global tour, I would have a clue of where they would appear the next time. And then by knowing how these things are set up, when I see that they start setting up an arena with the exact same equipment that Pink Floyd uses, that gives me a clue that might be the next place. What time will that concert be? Boom, that's it. And here in this, I call it the Global Tour of Terror, where this unit is traveling around, one of the things that is a major, I think they hate this thing, but it's a blessing to us, is that they have to leave clues in the evidence for the next upcoming event. And that is due to, according to insiders that have informed me, is that the way the people in the dark corridors of power in the New World Order agenda, the way that they interpret the law of karma is that if they subtly show us what they're up to and we do not react, then the bad karma would come on our shoulders, not theirs, the attackers. So they're very aware of that they need to show it to us, and then it's up. If we don't react, then we're the ones to blame. So this is the thing that I'm very, very deeply involved with, is trying to find what are the clues. Where are they? Because they hide them in plain sight, right in front of us, right in our face. It's often there, but it can pass very quickly, or you really have to look for it. But it's right there in your face. So that is how I've been able to predict these things. Because every time I do one of these predictions, I mean, I have the chance of looking like an absolute idiot and fool. And so on. But this is a risk that I'm more than happy to take, because I think it's extremely important that we stop this madness. So it's almost like a Dan Brown novel, you know, the end of one chapter and there's sort of like a clue for the next chapter. You just need to understand how these false flag operations are put together, carried out, what the ingredients are, and also the timeline, if you can manage to understand that. So it's almost like learning to understand a new language. And once you start getting it, once you start understanding how the grammar works and so on, then you can start also speak the same language and even predict them and stop them, hopefully. And so I think the most important thing that I've accomplished is to show that these operations are connected, because otherwise how on earth would I be able to predict any of them? Because they're in totally different countries, different continents, and so on. So how, if they're not connected, could I predict them? And also another question, if I were any kind of security police or secret police in any of these countries where I predicted them, why have they not contacted me and said, how on earth could you know anything about this? Either you're involved or you know something we don't. So please, here, sit down and answer some questions. No one has approached me. And the reason for that is because they are involved in them.
What do we know about the timeline, Ole?
I don't know a lot. What I know is that when you look at these operations over the years, the speed of them and the magnitude of them have just accelerated to a ridiculous rate. I mean, it used to be one every fifth year or that I know of, major assassinations, like one there 5 years later, another one a year later, another. But now it's like almost on a weekly basis. And I hope we can watch a video a little bit later. There's this new type of company appearing, which I find very scary indeed. There's a company that illustrate this very fully called crisis-solutions.com, where they very proudly brag about what they can deliver to their clients. And their clients are, they say on the website as well, anonymous and often governments and big international corporations and so on. But what they arrange are like a, they can do multiple attacks at the same time, even though they call them security games or drills for security reasons. But what they can now is coordinate hits on different countries, cities, even different parts of the world at the same time, simultaneously, where the only thing that people involved need to have is an access to the internet. And then they've got like one area that is organizing the attack itself. There, then you have another part that is taking care of all the ambulances, police, military units, or what appears to be military police and ambulances units. Because just because you've got vehicles there or people running around in uniforms doesn't mean that they are actually real police. It means that they got real uniforms on them. Does not mean that they're, once again, real military, real police, real ambulance drivers, and so on. And you will often see also that when you look at the behavior of these SWAT teams or police officer, or the ways that these ambulances or fire trucks are parked, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's a disaster had it been for real. So, well, what can I say? It's these type of companies like Crisis-Solutions, very, very dangerous, I think, because if they can arrange for coordinated attacks on different cities, different countries, even different parts of the world at the same time, they also have a unit that is taking care of a massive social media part of the whole thing, where they're pumping out Facebook posts and Twitter posts and with fake accounts and so on, in the hundreds, pumping out information about these things while it's ongoing. And a big center corporate, what do you call it, like a board meeting almost, where they can change in live action. If there's anything that goes wrong, they can redirect it and change it and so on. So the latest of these attacks, like the London one, I was able to predict. But in the London one, they started putting out clues about multiple attacks, which made it very confusing to me because I thought that was not possible. And then in Stockholm and the alleged Stockholm truck attack, it was pointing in three different new locations. So I just felt, what the hell is going on? And then this company, Crisis Solutions, appeared. I didn't know about it before. And when they tell us what they can do and how they can supply it, that is when it gets really scary, because it gets more and more advanced in the way they can accomplish this. And I mean, I'm just an a one-man band, and many other researchers are on their own as well. So it is a bit tricky, to say the least.
So we're thinking that this company, crisis-solutions.com, that, I mean, you look at their website, and it looks like they help you stay away from anything that threatens you, but you're suggesting that they actually are manufacturing the angst.
I am totally suggesting that they are there. And they were also involved in the drill 3 days before it took place in London itself. You know, so they also supply crisis actors, amputee actors. They have they supply dummies that looks very real. You know, it's like I had people at fake funerals that had to almost bend over the casket, to open casket funeral, to be able to spot that it was not a real body. So it's getting very difficult. So, wow. But at the same time, since they have to leave clues for us to find, that is the blessing. They have to do it. And I spoke to Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower, who used to be the commander of an ultra-secret hit team called Pegasus under the direct control of President George Bush Sr. He was part of carrying out at least 17 assassinations. So this is the real thing, I tell you. Only and he to, was taking part of false flag operations in his career as well. And according to him, he had no idea about this thing with the bad karma and why they did that. And so when I asked him, he said he was never informed about anything like that. But he said it really makes sense, because every time they were assigned to what they call terminate someone, he said that they had to approach that individual and verbally say to him, this is what's going to happen to you if you do not back down. And then if the person then still said, well, I'm going to do it anyway, then that was green light to take him out. But they had to do it first to make him, give in. He needed the victim had the opportunity to step back, and then if he didn't, boom, they had a green light to take him out. So he said that this thing with the karma theory, or whatever you want to call it, makes total sense according to him, that this is what they need to do it.
You know,
I can only say that once you start seeing how they put the evidence there right in your face, even in subtle ways, once you start seeing how it's done, you will be able to spot it quite easily.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, you provided us with a link to a video. Will this help educate people as to how they might spot this?
No, it will help to show what we're up against. This is the crisissolutions.org, their promotion video. So please put it on, and that will show the viewer what we're talking about, because that makes it a lot easier for me as well when describing the other things we're going to talk about.
All right, folks, I'm going to read the text that's on the screen. I had thought maybe there was a voiceover on it. Maybe these guys need a good voiceover man, but they don't have one right now, so I'm going to read this text in case you're not able to watch, but you're rather just listening. It says, hello, we are Crisis Solutions. We run crisis simulations. You probably know something about them, but exercises have changed. We don't just slide sheets of A4 across a desk or rely on telephones. In the real world, we communicate in a myriad of ways. We've harnessed web technology and created a secure portal called Crisis Cloud. That doesn't sound good, does it? Crisis Cloud enhances traditional exercises using news stories updated during the exercise, news videos, a client communication page, Twitter-inspired social media. Players can take part from their offices across the corridor or across continents. Let's imagine a large-scale simulation, Step Up. The CEO and other members of the suite, tactical team, various heads of departments, three regional offices are playing, New York, Edinburgh, and Manchester. So how do we keep all these people involved, engaged, and so forth? We need the scenario cell. It feeds scripted updates to the participants, while at the same time the crisis cloud works its magic. It's fast, dynamic, and when the exercise starts, nothing is nailed down, whatever that means. If a team takes unexpected decisions, the scenario cell changes the script on the fly. Oh dear. This is a crisis solutions crisis simulation. And it's totally secure. Okay, graphics. When did you last run an exercise? Crisis Solutions. The clue is in the name. World-class resilient strategies, Crisis Solutions. Well, that was quite something.
It is. I mean, this is scary, I think. Very, very scary, because what the listeners could not see, but the viewers could, that these different teams were involving military, police, ambulances, all of these things that we normally see at one of these terror attacks. But here, multiple attacks at the same time, coordinated by one unit. And also, I love it, this thing about, we said it's hidden in plain sight. They say crisis solutions. The clue is in the name. What clue? ISIS. Crisis. You see? It's right there in your face. So that is how they play us.
You're really serious about this, aren't you?
I think we all should be, because they're messing with us big time. So, and they're using, the thing is, it's a false flag, and not just there as a sort of a diversion or, you know, like ha 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 thing. It is used to move move the focus away from some things, and also justify other things like wars, totally unjust wars that we would never ever have accepted had it not been for this problem in the form of terror attacks or alleged terror attacks. So it's one of the major tools that is used against the global population, scaring us into believing that we are in a fearful place where we need protection and their solutions. But since these are inside jobs where they, the people that we think we can trust, are doing it against us, you know, this is the difference between all of these things being the work of Muslim terrorist fanatics or inside state-sponsored terrorism. Is the difference between these two options is massive, massive. So this is, I think it is very, very, very important to understand what a false flag is, how it's carried out, and how often. And they're getting very cheeky now. The last two ones in central London and in central Stockholm, midday, in mid of the afternoon, Friday afternoons, massive amounts of people, and still they pull it off right in front of our eyes. They are getting cheeky, and we need to stop this.
You know, Ola, this is really strange. Now, you're saying that ISIS is right there in the name. Okay, I get it, because that there it was, folks, right up on the screen. If you're just listening, it says, Crisis Solutions, the clue is in the name. I'm pretty sure nobody was going, hook 'em horns, man. I saw UT in Solutions, get it? UT was there, University of Texas. I'm pretty sure that's not what it was. And a little humor there, but only for this reason. Why would they write the clue is in the name? Why would they do this?
We're back to the same thing. They need to tell us. This is the thing. I don't know why they're doing it. I mean, if you ask me, it's plain stupid to put it out there. And also to leave these clues in these operations. Had I been in charge of them, And it was a covert operation, you know. Hide everything, do it as professional as possible. Just like CIA says, a perfect CIA operation is the one that will never be seen or discovered. That is a perfect operation. The operations that we, the normal people, find out are the ones that have been messed up somehow. But this is on a different level with these false flag operations, where they need to inform us. And like I said, it's in our face. Maybe there's another clue that I can't see in crisis solutions, but they're the ones putting it there. The clue is in the name. So find other clues. And solutions, I don't think so. The one that is very obvious, at least to me, is ISIS. And ISIS is the one that is being blamed all the time for all of these false flags operations. And ISIS, when you look at it and really study ISIS, it is totally their creation, the same forces. It is an upgraded digital type of version of the boogeyman. You know, Al-Qaeda just got upgraded to ISIS. Where did ISIS come from? Overnight, it was the worst threat the world had ever seen. Nobody had heard of it before. And when you look into the history of ISIS, it is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. You have the first leader of ISIS, I don't know how many times he was killed, and then after he was killed, he escaped prison, then he was wounded, then he was killed again, then he was replaced by another one. They couldn't make up a name, so they came up with Baghdadi, because that, I think they need, when it comes to these type of things, they need names that works, you know, just like a logo, a slogan. So Baghdadi, there's been two of Baghdadis, and they also have incredible lives. They've been killed, suicided, survived, wounded, then killed again, and then replaced. I mean, what are we looking at? The Corbett Report has made an incredibly good episode about crisis, where it comes from, and so, and also there's an interview from I think 1992 where there's an author that was looking very deep into these things way before ISIS had even been known to the world, and they were talking about the Israeli security intelligence, and he said it's very difficult at that point because you couldn't find like the CIA in the phone book or the MI6. You can just find them, but the Israeli intelligence services, you could not. And then he said, but then one day I was given the name from one of these people working for them, and they said, well, the official name is ISIS, but it's not publicly known, but it's Israeli Secret Intelligence Services. That is what it stands for. And when you look at these operations, Mossad is extremely present, as well as CIA, MI6, these are the ones, and NATO. These are the elements that are in these operations, then backed up on location in whatever country it is. And I would also like to suggest that this is a theory. Normally I stay with facts, but this is a theory. If you remember, a few years ago we saw what was called the Arab Spring, where quite a few North African countries, specifically Arab countries, had revolutions where the people made a revolution, boom, ba boom, boom, boom. They call it the Facebook Revolution. It was the first time where social media really played a massive role. And the government went down, the people took over, a new government, and so on. But what has appeared later is that CIA and other intelligence agencies have been very involved in sponsoring, funding, arranging, and organizing these so-called revolutions, replacing the puppet, replacing the person in power with their puppet, also taking charge of the central banks of these countries and so on. That was the Arab Spring. What I believe we're seeing here is I call it the Euro Spring, is because what they're trying to do is destabilize a lot of European countries. Because here in north of Europe, or in Europe, the countries are so stable. There isn't that, the powered up desperation and anger and all of these things like in other countries that have been much more suppressed and so on. But here, to destabilize a modern European country, you need something much more, with much more impact. And this is where this terrorism comes from. So if you look at it, like I said before, it's like a revolving circle. I can predict exactly which countries, more or less exactly where they're going to happen, even though I don't know the scenario. So when you look at Europe, we got the mass shootings in the U.S. The mass shootings are more or less only in the U.S., and that is because the American population is the only population that is really heavily armed. And so they use this old problem, reaction, solution. It's an old Roman theme where the ones in power secretly create a problem to get an emotional reaction from the population. And the emotional reaction they want is like, oh my God, we need protection, without thinking, just reacting. And then they will serve as the solution. And it is always a solution we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Problem, reaction, solution. So in the States, the weapons are the problem. So the mass shootings are there most of the time in schools, because we get more emotional when it comes to kids, teenagers, women. These are the things. So most of the time, if there is an adult killed as well, it would be a female teacher to get the emotions in there, but mostly kids.
Sure.
So, and also the solution is never ever let's get some more shrinks in there and more psychiatrists and more mental health care or something like that. Absolutely not. It's always the guns, problem, reaction, solution. But in Europe, it's a totally different theme.
Yes, men should be banned from driving trucks.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, seriously. You know, look, is very disturbing. You know, Ole, I'm thinking that at the beginning of the program, I did my usual thing before you came on. But I just had I had the idea that talking to you always yields some really, really good things. Most of them are actually quite disturbing. But I'm thinking of the Sandy Hook. I'm thinking of the Boston Marathon bombing. And certainly 9/11, but that's huge. That's big scale. But I want to just say it one more time, because I really want this to sink in. 90% of all of the casualties that's killed and wounded in any war you can name, any conflict of any note whatsoever, 90% are civilians, which means 10% are not. Let's go to the other statistic one more time. Only 10% of the population is capable of independent thinking. So the object is not to just discredit somebody's opinion or discredit somebody's ideology or discredit anything about other people. The object is to inject their brains with enough possibilities for the generation of independent thought that it may actually save their lives. Because as it stands right now, 90% of the population in this country is fodder, victims, waiting to be victimized. Now, Sandy Hook, I implore you, continue to support Wolfgang Halbig, because Sandy Hook, in my opinion, it has been proven to my complete satisfaction that Sandy Hook was a fraud. The Boston Marathon bombing, gee, that looks like movie smoke, and it does. And everybody that was either killed or lost a leg. They lost a leg. Like the guy rolling down the street with his little shattered shin bones hanging down, but he's not bleeding. He's conscious. He's upright. Now, you just think about this for a second. I want you to think about this, folks. Your legs have just been blown off. I'm using the words blown off, right below the knee. Would you be sitting upright in a wheelchair, conscious on your way to see the medics, with your shattered shin bones hanging down like that and you're not bleeding so much as a drop on the ground? No, you wouldn't. Now, I mentioned this, Ole, on Arc Midnight. I'd love for you to come on there sometimes, although it'll be pretty early in the morning. You're in Eastern Europe or some damn place. I don't really know where you are. And nobody needs to know where you are. But I mentioned that this guy was standing in a place, and he had this shirt on that said, "Make the scary Republican go away." And okay, he was kind of a fat guy, and he was wearing these outrageously ridiculous shoes, ridiculous tennis shoes, so multicolored, they'd almost give you a headache looking at him. And I got my sunglasses on, as usual, you know, so I can look around, and people can't see I'm actually looking at him. But he senses that he's being observed. And the next thing is he holds his drink over the shirt because he's starting to feel insecure about the shirt. The next thing, he's covering his chest and his belly as best he can to completely cover up the lettering of the shirt. If you look, if you just go into the psychology of what that man was experiencing then, he wanted to make a little smart aleck statement. He thought it was kind of fun, but he realized that he might be making a dangerous statement. He might trigger somebody. Now the shoe's on the other foot. He may trigger somebody on the right, because typically it's always people on the left who are being triggered. This is a person, in my opinion, who is capable of critical thinking, but he has an independent thinking, but he has decided to join the club because he finds some comfort in the club. This is what these people count on. Now, going back to Sandy Hook and all that, I ask again, the helicopter, the news helicopter, is in the air. I think it was WABC. I'm sure it was. All right? You got two guys, or one guy, and two cops. Guys running through the woods. The cops have got him down. The next thing you see, he's in the front seat of a police car, looking at the TV reporter's camera, and he speaks these words, "I didn't do it." And we never see him again. And I challenge anybody to find that clip on YouTube. I've searched for it exhaustively. I cannot find it. The only thing you can find is some sort of a bystander there that said a guy with kind of blondish hair came by a while ago and said he didn't do it. Now, the question is, who was that guy? Nobody has ever said. Why are they so resistant to release any of the FOIA documents? Why? Lenny Posner decides to file a lawsuit against Wolfgang Halbig. But when you're sued, you get to ask for discovery. You get to ask questions. They're not cooperating. Now, let's go back to the video that we just rolled. Go ahead. This will keep.
No, since you mentioned Sandy Hook, yeah. And if you mentioned Boston, this is my right arm. Anyone who can prove to me or prove that these were real events with real deaths, please chop my arm off. You're welcome to it. I've got a friend, an amazing couple. They're called Conspiracy Granny and Sidesaw, and you can find them on YouTube. They're just ordinary people, grand folks, that are going out there trying to do everything they can, more or less like me, but on location in Texas. And Sidethorn has sold a property, and he has $100,000 in silver, and he has put out a reward. Anyone that can prove any real deaths in Sandy Hook, and he's putting together a list of 30 other events. The list is up to 13 now. Can come in and get these $100,000 US. There's been no one that has made a serious claim yet, and I think this is quite a secure investment in here, if I'm correct. Also, you got Robert Steele, a CIA whistleblower. Also, he says that all mass shootings in the U.S. have been staged events by the FBI and government sources, together with the CIA also in certain accounts and so on. These events... Sandy Hook, zero dead. Please chop off my arm. Boston bombing, zero dead. These were the first ones where they were they started using this unit I'm talking about, where there's a unit where they can control all parameters. Because I believe it was after 9/11 when they saw there was this massive amount of real dead victims. where they had incredible problems with the families of these victims, especially mothers that would not back down before they found out the real truth. And so several mothers were eliminated, but they still came coming. So I believe that is where somebody came up with a bright idea. Why don't we just make it easy for ourselves, focus on getting this out through media, and then use a small little unit where we can control everything, including the victims, the eyewitnesses, the media, the reporters, the explosives, everything, the whole thing, and just make it a little closed mobile unit that can be used everywhere. And so this guy in the wheelchair, please look at him. I've got some wonderful footage, sort of almost like aerial footage with a guy you were talking about, Jeff, whatever his name was, Jeff Beaumont, I think. I forgot his name. I think the actor's name is Jeff Beaumont, where he's being rolled around. And if you follow him, you see that they run around with him in this wheelchair with not a single drop of blood, even though his bone is sticking out, his whole leg is shattered. And then they drive him out of picture. Then they come back in again, returning in, and then turn around, and they start going out. And he loses the leg. It drops off. So they had to stop, put it up, put it back on his leg again, because it's a fake. This whole thing with the bone thing is just fake. They had to stop, put it back on, and then roll him around for a while. So I love what is called raw footage when you see from London and Sandy Hook and so on. Also where they say they have these helicopters that are filming down, and you just see hundreds of people walking around. Just pick one of them. Pick anyone there's a fancy blue shirt or yellow or whatever. Just pick one of them and follow them. And you will see they're walking around in circles. They're walking around in circles.
Yep.
They're walking around in circles.
We've seen that.
Giving the impression of a lot of people walking around, but they're not. They're just everybody's walking around in circles. And you had the same on the alleged London attack, where once again you follow just pick one, and you will see they were carrying victims across the bridge, then turn around and go back on the bridge, turn around and go back on the bridge with people on stretchers. And then instead of going to the hospital, which was like 100 yards from the bridge, it's right there, all of the people on the bridge that I know of was instead taken into the Marriott Hotel, which is right across the street to where the hospital is. They were being carried in there on stretchers and stuff instead of being taken into the hospital.
They're taking them into the Marriott.
It is ridiculous once you start seeing it.
Yep.
It just becomes like a farce. It's like watching Monty Python, but you need to crack the code so that you see what's actually happening.
You know, I'm looking at this this video again. It might be a good time to mention this. It says right here on this page, news stories updated during the exercise. And who is receiving this news exactly? Number two, news videos. Number three, a client communication page. And number four, Twitter-inspired social media. So in other words, while you're watching the live news coverage of a tragedy, you are watching coverage of a staged event. And people, now look, some time ago I worked for a company that did black work for the U.S. government. I had to sign the paper on numerous projects, and therefore I cannot tell you what these projects were. In fact, I even trained myself to forget what the content of these scripts were. And but 15 minutes, I was pretty good at it. 15 minutes after the operation, or the recording, sorry, I couldn't even tell you what the title of the program was. Now, there's one in particular that I remember, but I'm not going to go into that now. But isn't it interesting that, what, there was somebody in New York? I mean, I'm going to roll it down a little bit farther and see if I can see the pictures again. But you have five or six people. Players can take part from their offices across the corridor or around the world. So Let's imagine a large-scale simulation, it says. I don't want to just labor this, but I want you to get this. The CEO and other members of the C-suite, tactical team, various heads of departments, three regional offices are playing, New York, Edinburgh, and Manchester. So how do we keep all these people involved, engaged, and challenged? We need the scenario cell. It feeds scripted updates to the participants, while at the same time, Crisis Cloud works its magic. It's fast, dynamic, and when the exercise starts, nothing is nailed down. I wonder, what does that mean? Nothing is nailed down.
It means that if somebody messes up, or if somebody like me interferes, or if somebody in something gets exposed beforehand, they are flexible and can change while going on. According to Jim Tatum as well, he said that when these things happen, these false flag operations, they're very closely being monitored by the people behind them, of course. And if extra emotional impact is needed, if they don't accomplish what they were aiming for, then they just add an additional event. And you will often see, for instance, if do you remember the so-called beheading in Woolwich, where it said that two Muslim black guys chopped the head of an English soldier? Absolute baloney. It was 1 week before the so-called Bilderberg meeting, and they were using it as a diversion to get the media to look that way. But the emotion didn't really get the real impact they wanted. So just a few hours later, there was a similar attack in Paris, just across the channel, almost identical, give the last boom impact to, and then they were fine. So we have to look out for these things as well. And just like you put a very good question out there, who is the receiver of this news? The receiver of that type of news is us. We are the receivers. The same with these Twitter accounts, the same with the Facebook and all of that. It's for us. It's not for the people playing the game. It is to dupe us. And that's how they do it. So you have to be very aware, just because it's on Facebook or Twitter does not mean that it is true. And I just want to point out another thing. When you look at the so-called eyewitnesses, all of the people that were interviewed on 9/11 on live TV, five different networks, all of them were somehow connected to the five different medias that were there, CNN and Fox and the other one. Somebody was working in a cafeteria, another was the wife of CEO, another one was a graphic designer, all of them connected to media. Normally what I found is that there are three groups. They're either connected to media, to film or theater, or the government. These are the ones. So, for instance, in Stockholm, in this latest truck attack, if it would be okay for you, I'll just go through quickly the people that have been interviewed on media, as far as I know, on TV, different channels, and so on. We have one called Alexander Perleroos, media. You got another one, Amy Piepelbosch. She's from Belgium, communication. You got another one, Annevie Petersen. She's a photographer. Camilla Schultz, she's from a media organization called Expo. There's another one called Karina Wickholm, she's a photographer. There's one called Klaus Johan Larsson, media and radio. Then you have Fredrik Lie, or Lie, if you take it in, say it in English, radio theater. Then you got one called Fredrik Malm, he's from the government. Then you got one called Johan Årdal, he's a filmmaker. Then you got one called John Buckwheat, government. Then you got one called Josephine Antonio Everdeen Skjoldbo. She's an actress. Julian Firpo, his brother, is in the government. Katarina Liebert, media. Laura Madsen, communication. Leif Anmar, he's married to a radio host. Linda Flood, media. Linda Johnson, journalist. Linda van der Poel, Dutch media journalist. Then you got one called Marcus Brintz. He's from Brino Media. Then Marlies van der Noort, media. Martin Svenningsen, media. Michaela Skoglund lives in Israel. Then you got Natalie Stewart, actress. Niklas Karlin, he's an actor. Nicola Swan, she works as an extra. Then you got Nina Hirski, she works for the Finnish embassy, and her colleague that was also in the very closely connected to the Berlin truck attack, both connected to NATO, okay? Then you got Ove Nilsson, TT, that's media. Then you got Peter van der Schilte, media and security. Then you got Sissela Nelander, actress, and so on. I mean, are you starting to get a feeling for what we're seeing here? Are any of them not connected, I would say?
No. I decided that I would take a look at crisis-solutions.com. Ashwell House, High Street, Longborough, Gloucestershire. Very, very expensive properties. That's where they're based, or at least that's where the admin for the website is based.
And also in Wiltshire, which is in that area, that is exactly where there were big NATO meetings, a series of NATO meetings, preparing for the assassination of Olof Palme, the Swedish Prime Minister, where people from different governments, where different NATO and military intelligence and different security agencies had a meeting deciding to take him out. These are the... We're seeing a repeated pattern. They're using the same forces, the same, even in Stockholm, this latest truck attack, it is in the exact same police district where the assassination of Olof Palme took place, where the stabbing and killing of the Swedish foreign minister, Anna Lindh, 2 days, she died on 9/11, guess what, 2003, 2 days before the election about the euro in Sweden, where they tried to get... Then what they normally do is if they can't persuade the population with logic, then they go emotional. This is why Anna Lindh was murdered and Joe Cox in England 2 days before the Brexit referendum. It's very, very similar. Then this is how we're being played.
Yep, that's right, there it is. The scenario cell changes the script on the fly. This is beautiful. This is a crisis solutions, crisis simulation.
And John, I would take it one step further. When you see live footage, I would say when you see footage from that location, because more or less always there's a drill before this thing happens. And the theme of the drill is more or less identical to when it goes live. At the 7/7 bombings in London, for instance, there was a live drill with the exact same scenario, the four different subway stations and a bus being blown to pieces. With I think there was like 1,500 people involved in this drill that then right in the middle went live. 9/11, there were about 20 drills. In Sweden, there were three different drills with more or less the identical theme that then took place. You know, so these drills are extremely important, and it's at these drills that some of the footage is taken and then used as live footage. So sometimes you can even see, if you check the shadows, the length of the shadows, you can see the time of day, you can calculate that on the shadows. You can see the weather. Is it the same weather in all the different clips from different news agencies and so on? Why also are there so few different variations of the footage? Like nowadays, everybody's got a cell phone with an HD camera. How come we don't see thousands of different variations from London or Stockholm? Also, it's just a handful. Like in Stockholm, even though it's said to be right in the afternoon, Friday afternoon, one of the busiest street, a pedestrian street in central Stockholm, I mean, you walk down there a normal day, hardly a person will look up from his iPhone. They are addicted to it. And here we have got more or less no footage. There's no footage of the truck moving, even though it passed more than 500 yards, killing officially 5 people and injuring 15, would there be no one that just said, oh my God, there's a truck coming, and aiming his cell phone at it? No. And the only footage we have is very blurry, as usual, especially when it comes to the poor bugger that they pointed out as the guilty one, because he's totally innocent. They're always very totally innocent. But the photos of the alleged attacker is always super blurry. I mean, you can't make this type of blurry photos nowadays with the standard of cameras in cell phones and so on. And then when it comes to the CCTV footage, well, very sorry, all the cameras shut down once again. What a bummer. Except one from inside a shop in central Stockholm. But it's not the CCTV cameras, because you can see that the cameras are shaking and zooming in, meaning that's not a CCTV camera. That is stuck on the wall. And then you see what is said to be this truck that just passes there that doesn't match up with the proportions to the truck that is then said to have slammed into this upmarket shop. Then, by the way, the hospitals had just done a drill the day before, where the exact same scenario was with the exact same shop, just that it wasn't a truck, it was a bomb. And the hospitals were even informed before it happened that they were to expect 15 injured. And then there was 15 injured just a few minutes later in this whole thing. And you have the same ambulance driver that is very, very central in this whole operation. His name is Kenneth Lavrell, who was the same ambulance driver that when the Swedish Prime Minister was assassinated. And there's a lot of controversy around this guy, because officially there were 2 ambulances, but nobody saw these 2 ambulances. There was a lot of weird things happening with the body, and it's an incredible, complicated murder story that I'll be most happy to come back one time, maybe just to focus on that one. But also, he says in an interview, because either Freudian slip, or I don't know what they're thinking, or they need to put it out there, but he said that due to the amount of casualties, they had to sort of take over a building next to Drottninggatan, this street where this whole thing happened, because he said 150 people was affected by this. That is what he says on national TV. 150. So are you telling me central Stockholm, the hospital is just a few blocks away, there's multiple ambulances, and 15 injured and 4 or 5 dead, and there's not enough ambulance to take part in? And why would 150 people be affected? Because what he is describing is the amount of people involved in the false flag operation. And this building that they took over it's called Centralbadet, which is a big, beautiful old spa, but giving you the exact things that is required for a false flag, with catering facilities, toilet, bathrooms, everything on standby right next to the street. I mean, it's like 20 yards from where the first casualty is found, you know. So that is the center. I tell you, that is the headquarters for the operation right there. And he just told us. And it just goes on and on. I've been in touch with a guy who's taking care of a lot of the shop owners who were traumatized by this experience. And he says that they were not traumatized by seeing the truck just go, you know, ramming down the street, killing people. They never saw the truck. But what they did was that they were just having an ordinary day, and suddenly what appeared to be police came and knocked on the window screaming, "Get down, get down, there might be a bomb, he might be shooting." So everybody, hide in the shop, hide in the shop. So everybody ran into the shops and were locked in for several hours while the whole street was emptied. And I tell you, that is when the truck started moving, when everybody was inside. And then the only eyewitnesses we hear about are the ones connected to media, theater, or the government. And then they have smoke bombs and different stuff to cover the whole thing up, so that you see it filmed in a distance and something is moving, but you can't really see what's going on because of all the smoke. Then the truck is just standing there. And then nothing is, there's no fire, there's no nothing like that, until the fire brigade comes. They put a ladder, they climb the truck, and suddenly somebody, it looks like somebody's dropping some kind of smoke device inside it, and then you have the fire, and it's all dramatic. And it just goes on and on. You know, there's, I can go on for hours.
This is awfully amazing. Another thing that this, what did it say? It says, let me get down here. Yeah, the scenario cell. Okay, I'm just looking over this thing again. This is actually really quite amazing. It really is. Bear with me while I get this thing up. I just want to get the wording exactly right. Oh, there it is. When did you last run an exercise? Is the question.
Exactly.
Crisis Solutions. The clue is in the name. Folks, I want to show you something. I want to show you something from, this is from the Daily Star, published 12th of July, 2015. Now, the text is, the clip appears to show a TV set and film crew watching on as a jihadi John-like figure stands next to a prisoner kneeling next to him. The Islamic State beheading videos reviled millions around the world as they watched Jihadi John callously murder innocent civilians in the most barbaric way in the desert. But this latest video suggests these videos may have been carried out by actors. The short clip, which has been watched more than 120,000 times, which is not nearly enough, captures a man wearing the same black clothing as Jihadi John does in the official ISIS films. Another man wearing a red baseball cap, possibly a director, exchanges words with the actor and then moves back behind the cameras. Now, we also know from independent.co.uk. Now, that one, that other one is dailystar.co.uk. Let's go to independent.co.uk. U.S. government spent over $500 million. That's a half a bill, okay? On fake Al-Qaeda propaganda videos that tracked the location of viewers. The Pentagon hired a UK-based PR firm to produce and disseminate videos during the Iraq War. Okay. If we can have, maybe there's some sound, maybe not. Go ahead and roll that thing, Chief. We're going to see the Jihadi John video. Here you got your victim on the floor, and Jihadi's getting ready. He's got to loosen up there, you know. He's got that. I always wondered where he got that great looking shoulder holster. Okay, now he's got his hand on the guy's neck. He's kneeling. And Jihadi's doing his thing. JJ. Okay. And now he's got that finger up. He's telling people what's up. He's got his knife. He's about to execute this poor prisoner. If you're, this is why we do video with this program rather than just do a podcast from Granny's basement, which would be easier in some ways, but less enriching. Okay, now he's going to cut his head off. Now he's sawing it like he's cutting a loaf of bread. And then he tousles the guy's hair. They're just having a big time. Now, that's Jihadi John. That's not somebody dressed up like him. He moves like him. He kind of wiggles like there. He saws his head a little bit, and then how he steps away and tousles the guy's head like, hey, okay, good job, good job. Wow. Okay, that's it. They're just repeating. They're just looping it now. Crisis Solutions. The clue is in the name.
Can I just comment these type of ISIS videos?
Please.
My personal comment is,
I mean, like, really?
It is so bad. If it's true, that's horrific for sure. But then you've seen, I tell you every single time, they're standing somewhere where you cannot identify the background.
Right.
I mean, it's some kind of the gravel dump that they're standing in, blue sky behind. No way you can identify where they are.
Yeah, it's a green screen.
It's green screen. And then often if they have two victims on their knees, I mean, one thing is like if you were to have your head sewn off, wouldn't you be sort of like in distress or begging for your life? But they're just standing there. Then you can see the shadows on the clothes are different from the because they've got spotlights from both directions. So they messed that one up. Instead of the sun, it's only one light source. Then you got like wind in the clothes that doesn't match up with the different individuals because they've got fans from both sides. And these type of thing, it just makes it very, very boring and incredibly tiresome to keep watching and seeing people buy into it. And by the way, as far as I've been able to track down, the ISIS headquarters is in Arizona. You will also see that they're sponsored by Toyota. And I challenge you, if you find an image where there's a vehicle with ISIS in it and it's not a Toyota, I mean, it is Toyota, 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 Toyota. And by the way, Toyota, the owners of Toyota used to be into textiles, so maybe they're the ones sewing up the clothes as well. At least they don't have to argue about the color or the flags that are always found there. You will also see sometimes in these ISIS videos, the vehicles have American license plates. Some of them even have, I saw there was one company logo still on one of these secondhand vehicles where they were shooting a big gun from the back of the car and so on. Just because it's filmed in a desert does not mean that it's in Iraq or Afghanistan. It might just as well be in Arizona, where I would humbly suggest a lot of this is being filmed. We're being played. We are being played.
Oh, big time. And you remember the story about the, golly, a Texas man's pickup truck wound up in the hands of ISIS. Well, yeah, that's because he drove it over the border from Texas. Went through New Mexico and boom, he's in Arizona. It's beautiful.
But what to say? And if nothing else, why don't we approach the ownership of Toyota saying, my God, here ISIS is the biggest threat the world apparently has ever seen. Why are you selling vehicles to them?
Yeah.
Stop it. Stop it in the name of the global populations and the well of us all. Stop it. But nobody's even seeing it.
You know, Chief just said something while you were speaking there, just as an aside, because we can listen to three people at the same time and understand everything everybody's saying and keep it in context. We're trained that way. But he said, and I was thinking the same thing. He goes, my guess is it's actually New Mexico. Because Arizona has this very distinctive reddish rock and very distinctive green and a very distinctive pale. The arid regions are, the desert regions are more, it's an exotic light khaki, distinctively different from New Mexico and Texas. And again, it's too beautiful to be the Middle East. I'm thinking New Mexico. No offense to anybody in New Mexico, but you know what I'm talking about. New Mexico looks like, well, it looks like the middle of nowhere. I mean, that looks like real no-kidding desert country. So, but now, if you say Arizona, that's fine because all you got to do is go to go through New Mexico, and in a few minutes, oh, look, there's the border. We can cross into Arizona here. It's not a big deal. So they could very well be based in Arizona and do their shooting in New Mexico, which would be actually even more convenient. I wonder how dangerous this discussion really is, Ole.
Depends on how you see it. I mean, I hope it's very dangerous. I hope it's very right spot to the point, you know, because that's the whole point of it. If we're just sitting here speculating, I might as well go and have a cold beer,
yes.
You know. I'm not into this I'm here to make a difference. So the more accurate I can be, the more of a problem for this killing machine, the better. I want this to stop. I want to turn this world into this beautiful place it's supposed to be instead of being terrorized by a small little tiny group of absolute cowards and weak individuals, you know. The thing is, the good news is that this is identical to The Wizard of Oz. The whole setup, I would suggest, is exactly like The Wizard of Oz. It sounds incredibly terrifying and powerful, like the Wizard of Oz. Do you remember when Dorothy was inside the castle and there was this voice, I'm powerful and you're weak, you're weak, you know?
Yeah, he's just this little worm.
She has the... Sorry?
He's just this little worm.
The thing is, when she's got the guts to stand up and look around without being scared away, you know, and then she sees this cable going in under this curtain, she goes up there, pulls away the curtain, and what does she find? Does she find a massive, big, powerful entity? No, she finds a tiny little old guy with a massive microphone and a big amplifier. That is what we're looking at. This whole thing is a massive joke. The so-called elite, that's their term. That's what they call themselves. I can have a lot of words that would be not so nice, that would describe them better. They are in the thousands. We are billions. We are billions. But they are controlling this black box in front of us. And it's through that sewage opening into our homes that they're pumping all of this propaganda into getting us into this fear mode where we're just crawling down on the floor, lying there saying, oh God, I can't take anymore. I can't take anymore. Because at this point, they've got us by the balls from so many different directions because we've been so asleep. So most people are so tied down, buried in debt, and you know, just trying to survive, that they don't have the strength to just stand up, breathe, and start seeing what's going on. But I would strongly suggest that is the way to do it. Take a step back. The next time something horrible happens, take a step back and say, before I'm going to react to this, I'm going to take a walk. I'm going to pat my dog and take him for a walk. I'm going to talk to my neighbors about flowers and the nice blue sky. And then after a while, I'm going to come in, have a coffee, sit down. And when I'm in balance, I'm going to watch this again and then see it not reacting emotionally, but just, okay. And ask yourself the question, who benefits from me believing this? Who benefits from me becoming terrified of this? And also, nowadays, when the concentration span is so short for most of us due to fluoride in the water and all of these GMOs and whatever, they need to deliver the message very quickly. So you will have the problem, reaction, solution being played out right in front of you on the screen. It will be like this. Just wait for the next one. It will be like this. The reporter, please understand, the reporter will be in on the operation. We'll interview an eyewitness that will be in on the operation asking, so what happened? The eyewitness will say, oh, it was horrible. There was blood everywhere. There were children and women dying. It was disgusting. It was horrific, horrible, to get us into the emotional state. Ah! So problem, reaction. And then, since our concentration span is so limited, the reporter needs to serve us the solution quickly before we change channel and so on. So the reporter will out of nowhere suddenly say, well, that just shows we need to ban automatic weapons, or we need to ban trucks, or we need to ban forks and knives, or whatever it is that they For instance, at the Charlie Hebdo incident, there was an identical interview like this. And then the reporter said, well, that just shows that we have to amplify airport security. There was nothing in the attack that had anything to do with foreigners or airports. When the mass shooting took place in Utøya in Norway, where there were 67 teenagers killed on this island, the chief of the secret police, she said, well, this would never have happened had the population been microchipped. What the hell was that? But that is how they do it. So the next time one of these things are being played out, first of all, please don't start laughing, you know, because once you start seeing it, it starts becoming hilarious after a while. So listen for it. Problem, your reaction, instead of reacting, then take a step back, breathe, and then act instead of react. They want this automatic reaction where there's no thinking involved. Problem, reaction, and then wait for it, wait for it, wait for it, and there it is, the solution. And then ask yourself, who does this solution serve? Who is offering it to you? You know, who is doing it? And please also understand that the people after these attacks that are clearly staged, once you have to take them into great, great detail to debunk the official story. But once that's done, understand that the person who stands up afterwards saying, our nation has been attacked once again, this is a war against all of us, we need to stand united and we will not bend down in the face of terror. These are the people doing it to us. The people that will be on the press conference in charge of the conference of the investigation, that person will be involved, directly involved. Different experts that are saying ISIS, 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 totally corrupt, directly involved. Their job, point towards the Patsy, away from the real solution, the real truth, and so on. So you can handpick these people one by one by one. Also, these eyewitnesses, once you've debunked it, I mean, don't jump into conclusions, but once you've seen that one was not a real event. So who was the sheriff being interviewed? Who was that victim? Just like Larry Posner, the father of Noah Posner in Sandy Hook, like Noah Posner had an incredible life. He died when he was 6 years old, as far as I know, in Sandy Hook. And then he died again in Pakistan 2 years later on the day at a mass shooting in Peshawar. Pretty amazing, I would say. It really makes you believe in reincarnation. And when his dad was approached with this information, wouldn't you say that he would be interested in finding out, how did my dead son end up in Pakistan and then get killed there as well? Because the identical photo was being passed around in media in multiple places, exact same big posters, all of this whole thing. But instead, absolute attack back, like he was doing to Walter Holbig and Jim Fetzer, these type of people that I work together, also publishing books about these exact events, totally debunking them. So if you don't believe Sandy Hook, or if you believe the official story of Sandy Hook, please go to the FBI's own website, go to Newtown, which is where Sandy Hook is under, check out the year when Sandy Hook happened, and check out the number of homicides. The number is zero. The number is zero. Go figure that one.
Now, the question is, what will, let's theorize here on something for a minute. Let's suppose that this conversation that you and I are having goes viral. Like when the Russians all of a sudden start showing up on this this one program with Joel Skousen we post on YouTube. 887,000 hits in about a week. Unbelievable. And the Russians are going, what is this? Who is this guy? Who's this Wells guy? But I repeat, for you, caravanners have heard it before, now Russians and Americans and people around the world are reaching out and touching each other and becoming friends. So that's a good thing. So let's say this conversation went viral. Let's say that it was just a synchronicity, something Carl Jung would have had to step back and really admire, because this particular program at this particular time and this particular number of viewers. And let's say that awareness of the real situation and therefore consciousness just rose what can only be described as a demi-quantum leap. What can we imagine the counter to that would be? If a huge number of people decided, you know what? We've been played big time, real bad, and they were sufficiently interested to really get angry about this to the point that it motivated them. Not turn it inward and make depression, turn it outward and make them activists and make them engaged. I mean, some real productivity here. What do we think the countermeasure would be from the ones who are perpetrating this bloody nonsense on the world? What do we think their reaction to increased awareness would be?
I tell you, John, I pray before every single interview that this will be the interview that makes the difference. I've done, I don't know how many hundreds identical to this one. I think it is a very, very good question and very important as well, how we deal with this, because it is just like a magician when he's doing some magic trick, you know, da 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 da, boom, a rabbit in the hand. How did he do it? We're just blown away, magic, magic. But then the more times you see him do the same trick and you start looking from different angles, go behind his back and suddenly you discover, oh my God, he's not doing it with his left hand. He's actually doing it with his right hand behind his back. The second you see how it's done, the spell is broken. You will not buy into it anymore. The next time he tries to do it, you will just like, oh, come on, go back to bed. It's not even worth watching anymore. It's the same with these type of things. I'm trying to break the spell to get people out of fear mode and see, oh my God, he's doing it again. He's doing it again. He's doing it again. This is getting ridiculous. Stop it. We've had enough. So it comes to a point, the breaking point, where suddenly enough people see it that they can't pull it off anymore, where the cannon fodder, like Henry Kissinger so poetically have named us, are starting to wake up and see, holy, we have been played. So the reason why they're ramping up the number of these alleged attacks, I believe, is because they're getting terrified, because they know that day is getting closer, and the only way they can save their own skins is to get us into this cage that they're trying to push us into, this controlled, very dark future where everybody is just under total control and massive surveillance. So the thing is, they speed it up, but they can't speed it up too much, because then it would be too obvious. So they have a massive dilemma here, which I think is absolutely amazing. So the question is, how do we deal with this? Because if I'm correct, it's just a matter of time, and I hope it's only a matter of a few months or something like that, that this whole thing will stop. So how to deal with it? How to deal with it? And I say, if anything is done in violence, then I have totally failed my mission. If anything is done in violence... Because the easy thing would be to just lynch the bunch, kill them all, and thank you and goodbye. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But that's their language. Violence is their language, and they're trying to get us into that position as well. They're poking us with all of these things, trying to get revolutions going, trying to get mass demonstrations and things going. That would then justify them. Martial law, all of these things, you know, even more soldiers and cameras and militarized police and so on. That's their language. Wrong way to go. We need to transcend this whole thing, to approach it in a different way. And I believe that the Mahatma Gandhi way that Martin Luther King also followed, based on the Upanishads and the old Raja Yoga tradition, that is the way to do it. Not totally nonviolent, no greed, no anger, no fear. Get all the old values back in balance, where honesty and dignity and being a gentleman, listen to the word gentleman, not an oppressor, but all of these things coming back into action, and transcend this whole thing. Because we need to ask ourselves, after this, I mean, we have been terrorized, like in New York when there was a serial killer. The whole city was being terrorized by one single individual. It's the same here. Mm-hmm. One single little tiny group. They're the size of a grain of sand on a beach. That's the proportions to the rest of us. So it's an absolute joke what's going on here. Once we have transcended them, what then? Are we able to get along? Are we able to create a new world that will work together in unity and harmony and so on? And my hope is that this is not only a physical evolution, but a spiritual as well. I think this is how I see this whole thing. It's like a spiritual war going on between the light and the dark. Because when you look at the theme, it's been going on forever and ever. It's just that now we're seeing a new digitalized version that looks even scarier than the old ones. But it's the same story, the good, the bad, light, darkness, and so on. How to deal with it? And I hope that There's this experiment that I really love where you can find on YouTube where they put like a loudspeaker, they put a piece of cardboard on it, and then they put some sand on it. They have a very low frequency to start with, and once they put on the sound, the sand starts shaking. You start raising the frequency of this sound, and suddenly this sand from shaking and just being in total whole mess suddenly just jumps into a beautiful pattern, almost like a snowflake. Then you keep rising, raising the frequency higher and higher, and then this, after a while the sand starts shaking again, starts moving, and then suddenly it jumps into a new pattern, different to the first one, just as beautiful but very different. Then you keep raising the level of frequency, and it just keeps repeating new patterns every single time. And I believe this is how the universe is partly built up as well, and that what we're going through is a spiritual awakening, a lifting of the frequency, our awareness. There's a lot of different sources talking about this lifting of awareness, this lifting. And I hope that we have gone through very shaky times, and now we're almost at a point where, boom, it will just suddenly go into the next stage, which will be beautiful, different. It will look the same, but our interpretation of it will be totally different. And I hope, that is a big hope for and wish from my side, is that duality will stop existing, and suddenly we will just wake up to this. When the point comes for the next step in evolution, where we'll suddenly see that, oh my God, we're all one. There's no need for us to compete. There's no need for us to fight. We're at a point where let's help each other. Let's see what can I do for us instead of what can I do for me? What can I do to help you? What can, you know, to give, and then see the whole thing blossom. Because every action, every thought, you have a choice. You have a choice of good, evil, of me, us, of greed, non-greed, of violence, of non-violence, and so on, of fear, of non-fear, and so on. And the more of us that makes the right decisions, step by step by step, we can create a fantastic place. At the same time, there are massive challenges. I mean, we have been raping Mother Earth for such a long time. She needs us. She really needs us. She needs a lot of healing, a lot of cleaning. We have big, big challenges waiting for us when it comes to that. But this is here where I also feel that the members of the so-called elite that are shitting themselves by now, I hope, not seeing a way out. I would suggest there is a way out. There is a way to make us less angry once we see what you've been up to. That way would be, for instance, you can give us back trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that you have been stealing from us and give it back to people so they don't have to suffer the way they do at the moment. You can also release so many, I think there's at least 6,000 different patents that are incredible inventions that have been bought up and suppressed, or just stolen and suppressed, that can do incredible things for humanity. Offer them as peace offerings to us and give it back. And that also, I think, will make the population less angry. You know, there's a reason, there's a lot of studies that show that if the rulers can just keep the population right on the limit before starvation, they can control them. But as soon as people start starving, they have a problem, because then you have uprisings, demonstrations, big time, and a revolution on your hands. So they've been trying to hold us right there where we're not starving, but we can hardly breathe. So once that pressure is gone, I mean, when you look at all this global debt that has been created, when you really start studying and you see it's created out of absolute thin air, once that the pressure is taken away, once people are being fed properly, people are being taken care of, and so on, the anger level will go down. So the people in control now have all the chances of making this a more smooth transition instead of them being totally slaughtered, because that is the option. I mean, the natural way of dealing with this, when you look at the man in the street, is that once he finds out, he just want to chop you up and serve you on a pizza. And I think fair enough. When you see how so few have created so much mayhem, the death of millions and millions and millions in unjust wars, the rape and plunder of nations, I mean, what else than anger? But anger is not the solution. Hatred, not the solution. I beg anyone listening here, if anything that I say have ignited these type of feelings in your heart, then I have totally failed. That is not why I expose these things. I expose them to stop it, to stop it. The main thing is that this madness stops. And then we can start building again.
I guess my last question would be, do you get the feeling out there that somebody, or rather, do you get the feeling that somebody out there really hates us? I mean, those outside the circle. I mean, why? You know, I got to flee to the Bible for this one. It looks like it's like satanically driven and nothing but. What possible explanation could there be for this orchestrated annihilation of people with no conscience whatsoever? No remorse, no empathy, none of that. The basic human components in these people seem to be missing.
But just like you say, they are missing it. They don't have these components. They don't have empathy. So really, can you blame them? I mean, what they do are things that a normal person would never do. I mean, their aim, what makes them happy, because I think everybody is striving towards happiness when whatever form, even a serial killer gets happy once he chops up someone or rapes or whatever. They're looking for happiness. And I think even the dark forces are looking for happiness, but their aim is the total opposite of what we are seeking. We're seeking love, harmony, compassion, forgiveness, have a good party, that our families are taken well care of, that our children are being well educated, that there's peace in the world, that we're being allowed to express our creativity and just live a free life. There, happiness is towards death and destruction and total domination and brutal whatever. That is what their happiness looks like. So they're just totally messed up, I think. Or they're there for us to learn from, because we have been so asleep that apparently we needed a sledgehammer up the butt to wake up. And they're doing a good job, I would say. So on a higher level, I call them the Black Angels, that they're indirectly there to help us in this whole quest. It's just that it's enough. Enough. It is enough. We've had enough. This war on a spiritual level, on this level, needs to end. It needs to end. So that's why I say, let's not even focus on them. They're so few, but they've messed up so much. So they need healing as well. And this is why I have this prayer. If it's okay with you, I would like to say it now, that I'm not a religious person, but it goes like this. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light. Because they need to heal as well. If they don't heal, this madness will continue and it will just amplify. So the thing is not to destroy them brutally, because then it's, when you listen to the word revolution, it just repeats itself. And if you study history, or at least the written history books that have been manipulated a lot, but once you start studying so-called revolutions, you will see that the people that took over when the normal person in the street went up there, chopped the head of the king, within a few years, the ones that did it became even worse than the ones that were there before. Even worse oppressors, even worse, because they can't handle power. They can't handle being in a position of the thing. So what all of us need to do is focus on ourselves, I think, to make the difference inside ourselves, to purify our minds, to let go of these so-called negative things like greed, like selfishness, like violence, hatred, anger. Find different ways of letting go of them and then start choosing love, compassion, forgiveness, and let live by example, and let these ripples just go out there in the world and make it a beautiful future. The more of us that do this, you know, Gandhi, he was a one-man band. He was walking around in what looked like a diaper. He had a stick, a walking stick. That was what he had. He didn't have hardly any teeth. He didn't have hardly any hair. And still, he, without an army, without a title, without funding, unified India in a situation where they managed to get the British Empire, I mean, when you think of it, the British Empire out of India. How is that possible? Not easy, but possible. This is the thing, this is what the incredible gift that he gave the rest of the world, showing us it is possible. A strong soul can accomplish massive things. So never wait for anyone else to change.
All right, now, what are you thinking is the next most likely scenario for a false flag? I mean, my head is just swimming with all this stuff we've been talking about today. Nobody bothered to ask, hey, let's get a hold of the sales manager for Toyota at whatever dealership it was that hooked ISIS up with all those trucks. Those are nice trucks, and they were all brand new. And so now whenever I see one of those little they got a special edition one, the TRD Pro. It's like, look, it's the first choice of warlords, terrorists, and special operators around the world. Which one? That little Toyota truck over there. Did anybody ever bother to ask? I mean, who sold all those trucks? Nobody says anything. It's
exactly.
Just...
and who? Please just bombard them and phone calls asking them, what the hell are you up to? Stop it, you know? Or just show them that it's not okay. It is because we're so asleep. Soon there will be a new Toyota models called ISIS, you know? And we will just, oh... I've got the latest ISIS. What have you got? You know, it's in our face all the time.
It'd be funny. I think it might be dangerous to put to have ISIS as your customs license plate tag on one of those trucks. That might not be viewed as funny by some.
Well, I tell you, there's a company in Arizona that is claimed from people on location saying that this is the headquarters of ISIS. In Arizona, called ISIS. So look them up in the phone book. I did. We started looking into it, and then they changed location. But the building is still there. The sign is still on the wall. ISIS. It's in your face. It is in your face. I had somebody on location ask the people around, because it's in a sort of like an industrial area where there's other company around, and nobody asked them any questions. They just, oh, it's ISIS, and then they just go on with their lives. But this is how we should not do. We should, when we see these things, then confront them with questions. Let the truth do the job. Just ask questions. Why, what, and how?
Do we have any idea what city they might be close to?
I don't know where they moved, but if you want to, after the program, I can just email you the address where they used to be located.
That would
be excellent.
I
cannot swear that it is the ISIS, but it is. It's the ISIS stands for something like... I can't remember, but it's sometime Internet Security International Services or something like that. But according to the individual that I have been looking into this and who contacted me, he says, I've been tracking this company for a while. They're the ones. But once again, you have to understand that ISIS is not a terrorist organization. It is a company that manufacture terror for media, and they have contractors on location that are carrying out mayhem in these innocent countries, sponsored by the U.S., being equipped by the U.S., funded by Saudi, and also Israel is there, and so on. Please ask yourself the question now when we're talking about ISIS, why are Israel not being bombarded with ISIS attacks? It's just a day's drive for these guys in their Toyota trucks in the desert areas, and they're said to be the enemy of Israel. So why are they not? Because they're not. Because it's there too. They're hitting the rest of us instead, blaming it on Muslim countries. So it's just an upgrade. Al-Qaeda, do you know, like, oh, let me go back. In the old days, it was the boogeyman was in Eastern Europe. It was, you can just follow the trend. It's in the James Bond movies. It was in the old days, it was the Russians, it was East Germans, Bulgarians, and so on. There were no fundamentalist Muslims at that time. None. Okay, then it came to a point where the Berlin Wall went down, fell down in the late 80s, where the whole Eastern Bloc, where the Iron Curtain went down, and suddenly there was no enemy anymore. We were suddenly becoming friends and uniting Europe and so on. So what were they going to do? They didn't have a threat anymore. So first they tried the alien threat. They really went for that for a while. Nobody bought it. So they were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Because nobody is going to follow our orders or want our solutions if we don't have an outer threat, a boogeyman. So they had board meetings and what are we going to do? What are we going to do? In on stage came the Muslim terrorist. That's where they were invented. They came from nowhere and suddenly they were just everywhere in the world, blowing up themselves, suicide bombers and so on. And so they went under the name of Al-Qaeda. Well, Al-Qaeda was a CIA creation in Afghanistan,
yes,
with the Mujahideen fighters and other people being educated as guerrilla fighters against the Russian army in Afghanistan. Then the Russians said, we've had enough, we're going home, thank you and goodbye. And suddenly they were left with all of these agents that they had equipped, trained and so on. So what are we going to do with them? What are we going to do? And just like with Gladio in Europe, the ghost army here, they said, well, let's use them for terror. So Al-Qaeda is actually, it means in Arabic, it means database. Al-Qaeda is the name of the CIA's database of their agents to create mayhem. So suddenly in on the global stage came Al-Qaeda. And then you had all of these, they tried all of these, not Jihadi Johnny, but you know, like when you have just a patsy for one incident, they will have, when it comes to Muslim terrorists, they will have names that you would never ever be able to remember, but they looked really weird, like or something like that. But when it comes to one of these repeating actors that they need to get this whole campaign going, they would come up with names like Baghdadi or Jihadi Johnny or Jihadi Jane or something that would make you remember it. Just like the Ebola virus, Zika virus. It's like a jingle, you know. They need to have the name so that you can be able to tell your neighbor, oh my God, have you heard what Jihadi Johnny just did or something. You would never remember, he just did that. You wouldn't be able to repeat it. So that's why they use these names. And then when Al-Qaeda had been used to the limit, I mean, you couldn't even scare an infant with Al-Qaeda anymore. Then out of nowhere came ISIS. My God, the biggest threat the world had ever seen. And then once people started focusing on them and saying, but hang on a minute, then they started changing the name to IS or ISIL or Daesh. It's still the same. It's the same, the same, the same, the same. And you will see that they have the tents, it says the U.S. Aid and military aid, and they've got advisors, they've got American helicopters escorting them. It's their boogeyman. It is their boogeyman. There is no outer threat. It is inside terror, manufactured, state-sponsored terrorism to freak you out so that we will accept their New World Order agenda. That is it.
So what looks likely? I mean, seriously, what next?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't answer the question.
What about Mr. Trump? What about Mr. Trump? We got Obama down the street, about 2 miles down there, and all this stuff. Oh, he's insane. He's a psychopath. He's mentally unstable, and all this stuff about wiretapping turns out to be entirely correct. Let's see here. Is that it? Oh yeah, BigLeaguePolitics.com, Veritas, Project Veritas, and Government Accountability Institute and Judicial Watch, and everybody else is on this page. And it says, former FBI Director James Comey seized and buried volumes of information that demonstrated a wide-ranging government surveillance operation targeting Donald Trump before he became president. The American establishment is so absolutely on the sides of their heads that I just wonder if maybe there might be a false flag, some sort of a flag, maybe a black flag operation being formulated against this president. I mean, he hasn't even been in there, what, like 4 months, maybe, almost? And they're losing their minds over him being there.
I believe that the last real president was John F. Kennedy, and even he was put in there with the help of some mafia connections and so on in Chicago. The people that took him out, the forces that took him out that day on the 22nd of November, 63 in Dallas, yeah, are forces that are still in place. It's a very brutal death machine, and you in the U.S. are the real terror tool in the world. I quote Chip Tatum saying that. All the rest of the people have been just another fancy cover on the magazine. Just because they're labeled presidents does not mean that they're the leaders of the country. And the only ones that have actually been one of the major players in the New World Order agenda that have really been in that power position is George Bush Sr., in my opinion. The rest ones then came Boy George, absolute brain-dead individual, no power. He was only there to sit the time off, smoking cigars, drinking, playing golf, while this whole brutal death machine continued. And they played the problem-reaction-solution to get Obama in there, where they started pushing. Boy George was totally out of order. All of these wars were starting. Everybody was just, in that position, and in on stage came Barack Hussein Obama. Nobody had heard of him, just like ISIS. Came from nowhere, in on stage. 2 years earlier, nobody had heard of him. And then backed by their media, promoting him as the best president ever before he was even elected, given the Nobel Peace Prize for things to come. I mean, this is the president where most bombs have been dropped ever. You know, so you see, and I believe also that the Series 24 was a way, a massive psyop of how to prepare the mind for a black president, how this beautiful president in the Series 24, I don't know if you've seen that with Keith Sutherland.
Oh, yeah.
Very interesting series. First season, incredible. I mean, everybody fell in love with this actor. He could have been the next president, the actor himself, standing straight, you know, not bending over for any kind of pressure. Second season, suddenly, oh, very sorry, we have to torture this guy, waterboard him, it's national security. The third season, he was just totally wild. But that opened up the possibility of a black president, because they, when you look at how the elite is working with Kissinger and Zabrinsky and all of these people, they have like, just like in a theater group, they have different characters, and then they in like with chess, they're sort of like, okay, what is the best next step forward? What is the most valuable way we can play this game? And so they have different individuals that have been prepared for many, many years, like Barry Soitero, CIA operative. He was prepared for a long time for this role as Barack Hussein Obama. But there were multiple other people. Had they been able to, had they had to change the theme, it would have been somebody else. But here, the idea was to get all of the minorities, the black population, Latinos, Mexicans, all of these Muslims as well, in under the same umbrella. And how could they do that? By creating a multi-layered individual that was created like a boy band. That is why Barack Hussein Obama, to involve all different kind of... And when you see with his birth certificate and all of these things, he's not even a real individual. And he was just created out of nowhere, but that's another story. Then came Donald Trump, and everybody, once again, problem, reaction, solution. Hillary, totally dangerous. So everybody was voting, or I believe, to try and avoid Hillary. And in on stage came Donald Trump as this savior, saying that within the first 100 days, I'm going to do, promising everything. 100 days have happened. I don't think he's created so much more than chaos in most the different areas. So who is he? I don't know. I really don't know, because he is one of the few individuals that has the finances to get to that level as running as a candidate for presidency, because a normal individual will never reach that level. The selections are... It's not elections, it is selections, where we believe that it's a democracy and we can choose that individual on that individual, not understanding that they're just two different arms from the same body behind the scenes. So who is Donald Trump? I don't know. I'm still hoping that he's going to do good things, even though he would be the first one ever that really did what he promised before the elections, because... I interviewed this guy. I'm just starting my own podcast within a few days here, called Light on Conspiracies, where I interview a lot of experts in anything from forensics to police to many other areas to confirm the things that I'm saying about false flags and other areas. But there was this guy I asked, and he said that politics is the absolute opposite to spirituality. Spirituality, where all of the beautiful human ethics and morals are being grown and so on. Politics is the exact opposite. These are power-hungry, corrupt individuals that would never reach to that level had they not been corrupted. I have that from inside sources. Everyone that reaches that level are somehow corrupted. Otherwise, they would not get there. So why even listen to them? Why put your trust there? The only place you should not do it, because it is these forces that are part of creating the mayhem. So that's the last place you will ever find any real solutions. So I have never voted in my life. I'm so not into politics, and I'm not religion either, because I believe that to a great extent is a power tool, even though it's beautiful in many ways, that it has many beautiful things that it can add to people. But we need to see this from a different point of view. I only track down criminals to stop them messing with us. I don't care if they're Hindus, Sikhs, Muslim, Christians, blue, red, white, whatever. I go for criminals that are doing horrific things to us, because I want that to stop. And then once that's done, then hopefully we can be part of creating something more beautiful. So I still haven't answered your question, my God. You said, what is the next thing? Well, when you look at crisissolutions.com, that is a scary one, I believe, because now... they put it out there that they control media streaming, news streaming, Twitter accounts, Facebook accounts. I've been aware of that, but not to that extent. And also this multiple location thing, that they can hit multiple locations simultaneously. That is also very scary, because in the last in the London Westminster attack, there were clues pointing towards Denmark and towards, let me see here, there were Denmark and New York and possibly Holland. in Rotterdam around the there was a marathon there. There were clues pointing in all these three directions, and I got very confused because this was before I discovered Crisis Solutions, because they were involved in the drill where they make it very clear that this is what they do. Then at the Stockholm one, there were also multiple pointing in multiple directions. So the next one, I would say, if we are suddenly being told that there are three different hits in three different cities in three different countries, all by ISIS, please be aware, this is, the clue is in the name. What we're watching is one of these exercises being played out in front of our eyes. So don't buy into fear or anything like that. Stand back and see what's going on, and then act in the most best possible way. So I think that might be what we're going to see, where there are simultaneous attacks. I really hope not. But also, I'm not really sure why the theme the last 6 months or so have been trucks. But if it's because they want to somehow make it that they want for security, for our security, that only trucks that are without drivers, that is digitally remotely controlled, will be allowed. I have no idea. But there's something going on around trucks there.
Around when?
And
around,
say again?
Around when? Sound like you said around Thursday.
No, I have no idea. But
okay,
around
gotcha.
Trucks, the whole truck scene, you know, where there's staged event. I've gone into great details with all of these different events, but the Nice attack, the Berlin attack, the Jerusalem alleged attack, the Stockholm attack, all of them have been trucks. And why they've started with that? There is an agenda, I'm sure, that there's something with these trucks, just like with the guns in the U.S. They're trying to make the trucks the problem, and then they will come with a solution. And so let's see what that is. What they've started to do is put barriers up in the city centers everywhere. But I mean, how can you protect yourself against a truck? That can happen anytime, anywhere, if that was real. So I don't know, John. I don't have a crystal ball. I haven't found clues about upcoming events. I have found clues about the same NATO countries. I can tell you if it happens in Europe, or I can tell you what countries it will happen in. It will happen, if it's in Europe, it will happen either in Denmark, France, England, Germany, Belgium, Holland, Turkey, Sweden, or the UK. I think that was all of them. If it happens outside, we've got some sort of like joker countries, like you know, they pull them in from time to time. Then it would be North African countries like Tunisia. Tunisia is the one mostly. Or you have mass shootings that will continue in the U.S., absolutely ridiculous things where even the reporters will start talking about actors and extras and so on. You can hear it in the voiceovers, putting it out there. But if it's not in the U.S., then you have countries like Canada or Australia. These are two of the main ones also. So it will be within these. When it comes to the European ones, you will have it happen in the same police districts in where it happened before. And you will have, sometimes there's an exchange so that the drill will be in, for instance, Antwerpen, and then the real attack will be in Brussels. Maybe they can swap that around, so it will be, the drill will be in Brussels, and then the attack will be in Antwerpen. But the targets are always the same. It is, when it comes to Europe, it would be some, or the U.S. as well, it would be something that has to do with a national identity, something that has a tourist value, like the Eiffel Tower, the Acropolis, the Colosseum in Rome, the Big Ben. Well, the Twin Towers are already hit, so that will be the Statue of Liberty, and so on. They will also possibly aim at military targets to justify military actions. That is why the Pentagon was hit in 9/11. So they might be aiming at the NATO headquarters in Brussels or similar thing if it's in Europe. Otherwise, it will be things that has to do with transport. So it will be either airports, train stations, ferries, airplanes, trains. So it will be, and sometimes they put it together into one thing so that it will be like a major train station, but there will also be something additional, maybe a tourist site thing right next to it or something. I believe that I stopped a possible attack to Copenhagen very recently on the 9th of April, where it was quite incredible because in the London attacks, they put out very strong clues that Denmark would be the next target, and on April the 9th. And April the 9th is a very, very important historical date for Denmark because that was the day when Denmark was invaded by the Nazi army in 77 years ago. So anyway, what was all of these attacks in London, in Stockholm, in the possible alleged attack or planned attack to Copenhagen was to get an emotional backing of the bombing of Sirius, because the theme of these attacks was the gas attacks in Syria, or the alleged gas attacks in Syria that would justify the bombings of Syria. So, for instance, in Sweden, where this truck is said to have run into this upmarket shop mall, the police that came there, I mean, this was a beer truck that just rammed into this shop, and the police that came there, within seconds, they were there so quickly, were running around with gas masks for no reason at all. And they were having them on for like 30 minutes or 45 minutes afterwards. Why? For this whole photo session where international media was coming on site. And just as a part of the PSYOP to prepare us or involve us with this whole thing with the gas attacks in Syria. And then that would justify the attacks. That's just a tiny little part of it. But very often you will see that there is a massive PSYOP involved in these. And they even have product placement. So they often have Nike is very profound when it comes to being present in these operations, partly funding them, I would say. Other questions that should be raised to Nike. You have Coca-Cola very often there. Toyota, I've already said. You have multiple different laptops and computer manufacturers. And the thing with these things is that when, for instance, when something horrific happens, you open up emotionally and your subconscious, everything, your senses is just very heightened. So anything that can be shown to you at that point will affect you more deeply than otherwise. And they're very aware of this. So when these things happen, for instance, the London bombings, where they one of the targets were a bus, a double-decker bus that was blown up, they blew off the roof of this bus. On the side of the bus, on one side it said, terror, pure brilliant. And then on the other side of the bus, where you see, I mean, all over the world, these photos of this bus, there's just a big poster, no letters, no text, with an explosion. And in the middle of the explosion is a big Coca-Cola bottle. Okay. Then you have Nike, Nike, Nike everywhere when it comes to these events. You will find trainers in the center of the images of SWAT teams are running around. Suddenly there's a trainer standing in the street. And these shoes, I'm going to come back to the why they're there, are in the hundreds. When you look at false flag operation, there are shoes everywhere. And victims are lying around with one or two shoes missing. Check it out. You will find it all over the place. So ask yourself the question, next time somebody is aiming an automatic rifle at you, starting to do a mass shooting, would you sit down and take off your shoes and then run? would you drop a shoe if you were hit by a bullet or if you were hit by a truck? Would one of your shoes just magically jump off your foot? Or what is going on here?
Yeah, really.
And the thing is that these shoes are very, very, they have a very symbolic importance, because according to Freemasonic rituals, and you will see the Freemasonic network, hidden network, it's very, very powerful within the New World Order. It goes totally hand in hand. And in their rituals, they have, especially for in the lower levels, that when a new person is invited in to take part of their rituals, they have to take off one shoe, and that shoe that is taken off shows that this individual is doing it voluntarily. When they take off two shoes, that shows homage to the sacred place where this ritual is being played out. So it is, I would say, like a secret message showing other Freemasons all over the world that this is our operation, these people are in on it, we're in charge. And also because the way they see it, I have this from insiders as well, is that the more emotional, positive emotions that they can get into these operations, because they are very much on these frequency levels as well with numerology and other things where they amplify it through numerology and so on, the more people around the world that are sitting laughing at us, the more impact it gets to their benefit. So I tell you, like you will see, for instance, in the Bataclan shooting, inside the ambulances where they've been carrying people in, you see the whole unit is standing, taking care of one person wounded, and then they're holding up one foot without a shoe in the air. In Stockholm, shoes all over the place. London, shoes all over the place. I mean, one victim, alleged victim even, on the bridge, you can see in one footage, the shoes are not there, not on the victim's feet, not on the pavement. And then just a few seconds later, somebody else is walking by, in being part of the operation always, filming it, and then suddenly there's a pair of trainers standing very nice next to the victim. And then you have, there was one guy who said to try and help and save the life of this police officer that is said to have been stabbed. He appeared on morning TV the next day. I think it was on ITV in the UK. And he said that unfortunately he lost his shoes during the attack when he was trying to help this police officer. So he came bare feet in the studio. I mean, I would say if losing your shoe is a problem, I'm sure you have another pair. So this was the day after, put on some shoes and welcome into the studio. But they're sending out these messages. So look out for the shoes. That is a total giveaway that it's a false flag. And Nike, even, you know, they launched these products as well. So, for instance, on at the Bataclan massacre, which was on Halloween, November the 13th, which was a Friday as well, Nike, where it's super central in many of the photos where SWAT teams are running around, you will see these shoes standing where crystal clear footage, you know, and exactly in the center of the image. Always look in the center. Or, for instance, the times when McDonald's has been part of it also, there will be photos of the McDonald's logo, and that would sort of take out half the size of the photo, even though in the background you have people working on wounded or SWAT teams running around. You know, so it's very, very obvious once you start seeing it. For instance, and I'll just keep rambling on, but when Charlie Hebdo happened, okay, I'm sure everybody has seen this black Citroen where two guys jumps out, two terrorists in black outfit. They run up on the pavement and they kill a police officer on with an Kalashnikov shot to the head, and then run back into the car and take off. I mean, everybody has seen that, I think, all over the world. I've even been on location on all of these sites here in Europe. I've been rolling around on the exact same spot as this police officer where we said to have been shot. By the way, he's doing great. He's in Buenos Aires. He was paid $666,000, very symbolic amount. And he's not allowed to come back until 6 years and with a bit of plastic surgery, a Mossad agent. Anyway, so the car that was used there that they jump out of, and when the shooters come back and jump into the car again, look at the right. There's a trainer right outside the car, and the shooter picks it up, or not the shooter, the guy on the passenger side, picks it up and puts it in the car, takes off. Well, that car was a Citroën C3 from 2014. The car that was then abandoned with, very luckily once again, the ID of the driver that then tracked them, pointed out the patsies, these two brothers, was a Citroën C3 from 2013, not the same vehicle. The first one had chrome side mirrors with extra light in the front. The one, the abandoned car, had black side mirrors and no extra light in the front. Not the same vehicle. But then the Citroën C3 that was being transported away from the location was polished as a brand new car, you know, so that when that was lifted up, it went out in media, international media everywhere, where you saw this brand new, wow, polished Citroën C3. Then you have all of these apps. They keep doing commercials for apps as well that, oh, ISIS are using Telegram or whatever it is, this app that make encrypted messages and so on. So, well, if it's good enough for ISIS, it's good enough for me. Then you have multiple people that are saved by their mobile phones. I was too close to a guy that in France, for instance, one guy who were there when a suicide bomber blew himself up, and there was a piece of shrapnel that came and hit, saved his life because he was on the phone. So you have all of these images where he's standing, oh, it's fantastic, my Samsung saved my life. Okay, so Samsung, good enough to save your life. You have other people that, Fort Lauderdale, a guy there with a Mac laptop where with a bullet hole in, and oh my God, it saved my life. Another one in Istanbul there with another laptop that saved his life. And I tell you, you put a laptop on a firing range and you use a Kalashnikov or an AR-15 or something like that and see if it stops a bullet. I ask you, will it stop a bullet? It will not. Product placement, that is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy. So just like in the case of Charlie Hebdo, where you can see the guy shooting his AK, he's not pointing it at the guy. You can see the round hit the sidewalk.
I beg to differ. I've gone frame by frame by frame. What you actually see, it looks like a ricochet from the pavement, but it's not actually. If you go frame by frame, we will see that he's got a black little canister in his left hand, and it's the smoke comes from that in an upward right angle. So he is just, there's no sound to that. They've added the sound afterwards, and it's the smoke canister that gives that impression. So no shots were fired. And you will also see that this whole thing, if you listen, you turn up the volume, there's a park in the background, and you can hear the sound of playing children and a woman's voice. Then this whole thing happens, and they start firing, shooting, bam, 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 bam. And in the background, still children playing.
No.
Is that possible?
Well, you know what? I miss that totally. That's why we have you, Ole, because people like me miss
it. I mean, you need geeks like me for things like that, you know. I mean, get a life, that's what I tell myself. But so who was filming it? Who was filming it? Well, was it just an ordinary Parisian that had just had breakfast and a croissant? No, it was one of the editors from the second biggest TV channel in Israel that just happened to be there filming it. So we go to Nice. Who was the one who filmed the truck the truck attack, where you actually don't see the truck hitting anyone. Well, he was standing on the balcony of Hotel Westminster, the exact same name as the bridge in London. And the way we track that is because there's a lit up W on the balcony. You can see it down on the left corner. And the distance from where he's filming, where the attack starts, and then where the alleged shootout, where the police are said to have killed the driver, the official story said that the truck went on for 1.2 miles, killing people all the way. The distance from where he filmed it, where it began, to where the shootout was, is 215 yards. Okay, just one block that was closed off for this operation. Okay, so who did the filming? Well, it was a German guy, a journalist, here we go again, media, who just happened to be there on the balcony. His name is Richard Gutjahr. So I always question people when they start filming before anything happens. Because if something happens for you or me, bang, something happens, you pull out your camera, you start filming. But if you film before it actually happens, shows you that there's a major possibility that you are in on it, that you have forehand knowledge about what's going to go down. So Richard Gutjahr, let's check Richard Gutjahr out. Well, he's an internet sensation as a blogger journalist type of thing. And I don't know if this has anything to do with anything else, but he was actually the first guy who got an iPad. He was the number one in the queue of thousands and thousands of people getting an iPad. And he came out being filmed by international media, very happy. Oh, I'm the first one. But forget about that. We check out his family relationships. Okay, so his wife turns out to be a woman called Einat Wilf. And Einat Wilf is a former member of the Israeli government. She was a member in Knesset. She was a personal advisor to Shimon Peres, not a lightweight. She did her military duty connected to Mossad in Unit 8802, I think it was. So here we have a guy that just happens to be in France on holiday, happens to be filming when the attack starts, before the attack starts, who is married to a top name in military government. Oh, sorry, the Israeli government. You can find lots of her on YouTube. Einat Wilf, with a W, Wilf. Okay. So just a few days after the Nice attack, which I predicted before it happened, indirectly, I pointed the next one to Acropolis because there were signs pointed towards Acropolis. But instead they hit Olympia, the Olympia supermarket in München. Okay, that's Germany. So who just happened to be there filming? Well, welcome in on stage, Richard Gutjahr. What are the chances? And then one of the people that were interviewed by international media, most of all, was a young girl called Tamina Stoll. So who is Tamina Stoll? Well, she's the daughter of Richard Gutjahr. And she had just returned from a trip in the U.S. where they was taking photos of her together with Hillary Clinton. There were photos taken more or less at the same time of Einat Wilf together with Shimon Peres. And Shimon Peres had just been at a photo session with Obama. I mean, are we starting to see something strange here? Then the Berlin truck attack happened, and I thought, Berlin, are you kidding me? Are Richard Gutjahr, is he going to turn up here again, or have we not sort of eliminated him by exposing him? Well, he was not there, but instead what was filmed there was done by a friend of his from the Berliner Morgenpost, who was just the one who filmed the people lying around. There was like 60 claimed casualties, where we see three of them. So all the rest of them must have been under the truck, where, once again, I've debunked this one in a major way in multiple interviews. Please check on YouTube. So who else was on location when this alleged truck attack happened? Was Einat Wilf there? No, but it just happened to be that her colleague at the University of Tel Aviv, Shlomo Shapiro, who is an international recognized expert in terrorism, international terrorism, just happened to be on location just a few minutes before this truck is said to have done what it did. And then you have people walking around giving thumbs up and being interviewed, connected to NATO, press secretary of NATO, connected to different embassies, media, and so on. Am I making a point here?
Oh, I man, so. You are making so many points, and a lot of them are hitting me simultaneously. So I guess the big question is, other than just a widespread, not necessarily fear, but let's say insecurity, what's the point in all of this? What do they want?
Okay, this is what they want. They want what they've written. You can read about it in their books. People from the New World Order, Kissinger, Shcherbinsky, these type of people. It's there, right in front of us. Agenda 21 and so on. So it's what is called the New World Order agenda. What do they want? They want to destroy everything. They wanted to destroy all nations. They want to destroy religions, history, individuality, creativity. They want to destroy everything, nature, everything. And out of these ruins, they're going to build what they called the new world, their new world, under their agenda, which is called the New World Order. Okay, so how will that look? Well, it will be a one world army. This is a creation of the U.S. Army and joined together with the NATO forces and the U.N. troops. It is not there to protect us. It would be there to control us. And this is what we see now, the new normal. If you haven't noticed that there's a lot of armed soldiers everywhere on airports, train stations, you know, it's the new normal. They want us to get used to army trucks in the street for our protection. They want us to get used to seeing these things. And all of it, I tell you, all of it is based on fake terrorism. Over all of these years, it's 30-odd years I've been trying to uncover what is actually going on. I have not found a real terrorist. I tell you, I have not found a real terrorist the way we are being told that they look. But I have found multiple cases of inside jobs. Inside jobs. So a one world army, a one world religion, that would be their religion, where they will destroy everything else. A one world digital currency. It's very, very important for them that it becomes digital. Because now, when you got your credit card or whatever it is you pay with and it doesn't work, well, what do? You take up cash and you pay. If somebody is cutting your lawn, you give them cash. Babysitter, you give them cash. But once it's digital, the one that controls the chip in your credit card or in your hand, because they want us microchipped as well, the one that controls the computer that controls your chip can turn you off. They can just say, thank you, you're out. Boom. If you don't behave, boom, you're out. So very, very dangerous with this digital one world currency. It freaks me out when I think about it. And they're using countries like Sweden and Denmark as test-run countries because they are so civilized. I was born in Denmark. I grew up in Sweden. So civilized, so highly educated, and so asleep, I'm telling you. And so in Sweden now, it's cashless. It's a cashless society. It's like, I think, 98% cashless. You can't do anything, even people in the street asking for money have card readers. If you want to buy a cucumber at the local market, they've got card readers. If you buy Monopolies for kids, their credit cards in. There's no cash in it anymore. It's gone. And, oh, it's so easy and so efficient and it's so handy. Yeah, until you are suddenly a problem for the one that controls your chip. Turn off, you're dead. That is also one way of getting rid of all kind of black labor, all kind of things that they cannot control. As I mentioned, they want us all microchipped. They're doing it very fancy. So now I'm a VIP on this club. I can just go like this and I'm in. Or look at me, this new super modern office, I can open doors with the chip that I've just got implanted. Very, very handy. Yeah, but it's also with a GPS. It also controls you everywhere you go in these new smart buildings. It can see when you're on the loo. It can see when you're having sex with your wife. It can see everything. all of these smart products very, very dangerous, because they say they're smart, but it's because they're smart for them, because this is how they control us. It's all a matter of control, control, control. So their agenda is to get us into a very, very dark future, totally controlled, two-thirds of us dead, gone. They don't want two-thirds of us. And then they want to rearrange the world where the U.S. will just be like a big national park. The whole power center will be moved to China. And listen, John, I don't get it. I mean, it sounds like an absolute mad scientist that have gone wild.
Doesn't it?
You know, so it does.
You know, but and on the also, one hand, people have said that they took... Go ahead, I'm sorry. I'll dislocate.
No. I just want to point out a question, because there's a lot of experts that say that these forces on the absolute top of the pyramid are aliens or reptiles or whatever they are. I have no idea. My knowledge goes up to the level of the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, Skull and Bones, these organizations that are totally part of this New World Order. Very important to check out the Bilderberg Group and other organizations like that. Who are the members and so on, because they are a part of this agenda behind the scenes that are forcing us in exactly that direction. But the whole question you have to ask yourself is, why are they destroying the air, you know, with radiation, with all the chemtrails, making everything so acidic? Why are they destroying the earth with once again, all the chemtrails and pollutions and so on? Why are they killing everything if it would not be for some kind of benefit? Is it just because they get off for seeing things, for killing things? Is that the thing? Or are they preparing an atmosphere, a planet that is better for them to live in? And then that is suddenly where these type of speculations make sense, if whoever these forces are needs a more acidic environment that is not good for us at all, but is beneficial for them. Is that what they're trying to create? I don't know. I just say that I'm devoting my life to not letting it happen.
You know, it would be pretty easy. Okay, let's just stretch our minds out a little bit here, even more than we've stretched them already. I mean, in the same way that everything is so contradictory, for example, Richard Nixon, right? He did far less than Obama ever did. Far, far less. I mean, this is like a little facial pimple compared to a massive life-threatening, it's definitely going to get you, tumor, you know? That's the difference in the magnitude of the offenses. Now, so five guys in business suits and rubber gloves are confronted by a security guard. Washington Post, may I just say as an aside, and Bernstein and Woodward, oh, they're on the case, right? Washington Post is nothing but a shill for the globalists, in my opinion. What these mugs want, they write these massive stories, and then somewhere in there is a disclaimer that states in strictest terms, this is unconfirmed and probably BS, but you probably scanned this rather than actually read it. And so we're on a quest to get our next Bernstein and Woodward moment, because the Washington Post is the publication for bringing down presidents. That's what these mugs want. Now, let's go back to that. It's been explained to me, and it was quite a credible explanation, I thought, that the reason that they wanted to bring Nixon down was because they, capital T with quotes around the word, they wanted to move the entire manufacturing sector to China, right? They eventually wanted to offload all of our stuff and make it their stuff, and we'd just buy it back in this continual, what is effectively a Ponzi scheme, a pyramid scheme. Okay, fine. But what do people credit, generally, people credit Richard Nixon with as far as geopolitics are concerned? Opening the door to China. So it's like, which is it? You wanted to bring them down because they wanted to move it over there? Oh, well, we did manage to move it over there, so now we're going to credit him with opening the door for us to further our initiative? This makes no sense to me, but I think that's part of the plan. None of it makes any sense. Now, you have everybody from Schultz, Kurzweil, Musk, and others. Ah, the singularity. What we really want to do is we want to combine AI with the human being through transhumanism, produce the singularity, one great big human Borg. And in furtherance of this, we're going to screw up the atmosphere and the environment on a spectacular level so that you are compelled to do this. Now, a couple hundred years from now, people may be writing, if such a thing is still possible, or maybe you just think and it appears on some sort of holographic screen. I don't know. But, of course I don't. But, yeah, back there in the 21st century, the very earliest parts, years of the 21st century, people like Wells and Damigard and others would get on there and talk about this horrible agenda that was being mounted in furtherance of dehumanizing all the humans and moving toward this glorious future they had in mind. However, these people were just misguided. Had they had a real influence on humanity, we would have not been able to meld with machines and made ourselves virtually immortal, cloning our brains, minds, and even our souls on little hard drives where they could be reloaded. Anytime one of the human machines broke down, you know, for the right price, well, we'll just reinstall your essence into a new machine. And it permitted us to go into space and conquer, emphasis on the word conquer, new worlds and expand our reach far into the galaxy, not only our own, but other galaxies beyond our imagination. All these things were made possible. If it had not been, we'd have gotten there sooner if it weren't for these primitives like Damigard and Wells. Now, that could happen, but in the end, I really think what they want to do is mock God. I think they want to mock the Creator. I think they want to extend their lifespan. It says right in the Bible, you know, I'm paraphrasing big time here, but it's like 800 or 900 years like Methuselah did. No, it's written in Scripture, God would not contend with man, so he limited his years to 120. I mean, you can go and talk to a Buddhist it escapes me at the moment. The martial arts, Chinese and Japanese both. And you talk to any martial arts master who's a real master. As my Korean master said, he didn't just get off the plane with his little, he said these words. He said, he gets off the plane with his little slanted eyes and his little yellow skin and calls himself master and everybody believes him. And that's a real martial arts master said that. Now, he was very indignant about some of these phonies. But anyway, they all say that the human lifespan is limited to 120 years. And they're not readers of the Bible, necessarily. But everybody's on the same page as far as that 120-year mark. Although that guy in wherever it was, Jakarta, I think, made it to 146, they say. So what do you think? Do you think you... Now, you said you're not a religious person. That's okay. Some people believe that if they are religious or spiritually oriented, then somehow they're not as objective as they otherwise would have been. They feel as though maybe having religious beliefs or a deep spiritual center makes them less able to analyze. Hey, if that's their thing, I'm not going to argue with them about it. I think they should examine it at least closely later, because I think there's something to be gained and also something to be lost if they do not. But that's just me. That's not necessarily you. But it's either they're preparing the human race for the next so-called quantum leap, but then again, when was the last quantum leap? I don't think there was one. I mean, unless you want to call the industrial age and then the space age and then the technical age, you know, some sort of a quantum leap. Those are just inventions. That's just manipulating stuff that's already been invented or already exists, and you put two or three things together and you got yourself a brand new idea. It's either they really want to do this and it really is science-based and they really do understand that, you know, it's going to be painful, but a lot of these people are just going to have to go. They're just going to have to die and get off the planet so that we can do this, because there's too many people, the margins are too low, the resources are too scarce, we're running out of rare earth metals as it is, and we just got to get rid of some of these mugs so that humanity can have this grand future. Or it's a total affront to God, and it's completely satanically driven. And the way I come up on this, Ole, is that those are the choices. I can't even think of a third possibility.
I can only say that what I'm looking at when facing these things that I dig into, I keep running into the pure satanic aspect of the whole thing. The way there's no consideration for humanity, there's no emotions, caring, nothing. It's very brutal, total dominance, total destruction of everything, and with a very, very strong satanic background, many rituals, the location, numerology, it's very dominant once you start looking into it. And I think that when you look at the world and you think, oh my God, the world is mad, it's not really. It's just that we're being played once again, and they have named things in a way to disguise them for us. Because if you just use your normal logic mind and then ask yourself questions, you will see this thing that you think is mad, it is mad according to the name of it, but just give it the exact opposite name and suddenly it all makes sense. So I would say instead of the White House, I would call it the Satanic House. If we say the next military operation that they call the Operation Liberty, absolutely not. The real name is Operation Total Slaughter, Plunder, Domination, and Killing of Innocent People in the name of the greed of a few, not the soldiers at all. You see, when you really start looking into symbolism and you see the uniforms and the police uniforms where all of these Freemasonic symbols are there right in your face, you just have to see them. It's like next time you find something that is confusing you, like you look at the there's so many of these where children are being abused or being delivered into satanic pedophile gangs, international trafficking, horrific events. But then you look into the organizations that are doing it, that are actually organizing it, and they will always be some pro-helping children. Oh, we are here to this and that, beautiful front and so on, but behind the scenes, totally the opposite. So when you see organizations or authorities or whatever that are behaving strangely, just try, just for fun, to take whatever name of that institution and change it. Go 180 degrees and see, whoops, does that make more sense to it? And then suddenly you will go, oh my God, is that what is actually going on there? I can't prove that it is, but once you start looking into it, this is what you might be facing, and sometimes understanding what you're up against will make it a lot easier.
You know, Ole, we have spent a lot of time trying to play catch-up. I really appreciate your sitting around this long, because this is a long program, and it's unusual to be able to talk this long with somebody. The last one that I remember was Hugo Fugin, when he deconstructed the whole Loretta Fuddy fatality when the Cessna caravan crashed there by one of the Hawaiian islands. And it looks like such a load of horse manure. It's unbelievable. I mean, they even had restricted airspace above the so-called crash site. You know,
is that the one where two plane crashes into each other?
No, that's the one where the big Cessna caravan, the big high wing that holds 10 people, I think, or maybe 14, it had a hard landing carrying the Hawaiian health director, who was the one to verify Barack Obama's phony birth certificate. She's the only fatality on the whole thing. And they're standing up in the water. It's like waist deep water. There are swimmer delivery vehicles all over the place. Frogmen everywhere. It's so transparently staged. We sat with him for 7 hours. Seven.
Okay.
We had to make it into a two-part show. It was ridiculous. It just wouldn't stop. I mean, the engines are wrong. The propeller blades are bent wrong. And is it this engine or is it this one over here? And just a bunch of nonsense. But here's the thing. What we've done so far on Caravan to Midnight, really almost up to this, maybe even this day, maybe even this conversation with you, we have spent a lot of time playing catch up. Kennedy assassination, 9/11, Sandy Hook, Boston bombing. We didn't go into a lot of detail on the Bataclan shoot 'em up, or the thing in Orlando, or the thing out in San Bernardino. Spent a little time on the Aurora shooting. James Holmes, who looked completely insane, his eyes as wide as saucers, looks like it was photoshopped almost, as his picture did. And I'm thinking that now, maybe at this point on this very day, let's see, 7 is 12 is 3, you know, I don't know, numerologically it doesn't mean anything, but then, not to me anyway, but it seems as though we have really literally crossed the proverbial Rubicon. Now, I think we have satisfied ourselves that, yep, Lee Oswald was a CIA officer. Yep, Clay Shaw, David Ferry, all those people knew each other down in New Orleans. Yep, the mob was involved, certainly was. Yep, CIA has worked with mob routinely. They don't have to fill out any paperwork if they need a boat or a shooter or a plane or anything else. No paperwork, no forms to fill out. Just call them and get it done. This whole 9/11 thing, we know damn well now that that was controlled demolition. We know damn well that those planes did not bring down those two buildings. And 99% of the people you talk to out on the street, I realize I'm talking like a machine gun now, but I'm trying to get through this. They don't even know about a Building 7. I asked somebody, a young woman recently, do you know how many, just a random person, I just said, it kind of came up, it was convenient to ask, do you know how many buildings came down on September 11, 2001? And she said, well, three, and I was thinking, wow, somebody knows about Building 7. But no, she said, well, it wasn't actually brought down, but the Pentagon was hit. It's like, yeah, I said, you don't know about Building 7? She goes, no. Well, most people don't know about Building 7. Most of them missed that BBC broadcast. It was, oops, we've lost the signal for an hour, and then it comes back, and now it's down because before it was still standing. It was so stupid. So, we can start the real work now, and the real work is in predicting what they will do next. And given the cycles, the dates, the symbology, the organizations, I don't think it's going to be that hard. I think it'll be hard, but I don't think it'll be impossible to predict what their next moves will be, just based on the information that they release through the Marx stream media. Now, how do you feel about that? That was one hell of a rant.
Oh, I feel fantastic. It's like, this is also, you know, like I said, I spent 30-odd years doing these things. Enough with looking into these old things. Enough about 9/11 and so on. The thing is, it's very important with 9/11, for sure. But the thing is, the forces that took these buildings down and used them as an excuse for the war on terror and so many other things are still in action. Yep. They're the ones doing it to us here and now. So, okay, how were the buildings, were they dustified, were they nuked, were they just controlled demolition? How were they brought down? Important, because the day when, once this whole thing is done, and we track down the people that did it and stop them from messing with us now, then we can ask them, listen, guys, how did you do it? It was amazing. I mean, how can you dustify these two incredibly strong buildings? How did you do it? Because maybe that technology can be of great beneficial value for humanity. But until then, let's focus on what's going on now, I would say, and then see, just wake up to the facts of these false facts, because they've got very, very few weapons against us, really. Diversion, divide and conquer, and false flag operations. That's more or less it. Then, of course, amplified with a lot of psyop propaganda, all of these type of things. But the main ones are very few. So once we just debunk them and see, okay, I got it now. This is how they set it up. This is how they carry it out. That is who they blame. The guy in the investigation can totally not be trusted. He's in on it. The commissions that follow, I'm not even going to spend a minute looking into that, because they are also involved in the whole thing. So that just helps me pinpoint them out. Okay,